Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. We're glad you joined us today for our lesson on photographing the Northern Lights, so stay tuned. Thanks for being with us today, and we also want to thank our panelists who came to be with us. We have one of our editors, the editor of Studio Classroom, Linda Ludwig. How are you today, Linda?
I'm great. Thanks, Doris. How are you?
Thanks for being on the program.
Well, it's great to be here. I always like being on Advanced Magazine.
Have you ever seen the Northern Lights?
I have.
Well, that's good. That's one reason you're here today. And we have someone else who is working on a lot of our different programs, and his name is...
Simon.
Simon Stops.
Simon Stops.
Stops is a very interesting name. Does it ever stop you anyway?
It doesn't. No, I found it to be a pretty good name in a lot of ways.
Is that a British name?
It is. It's an English name. And it's served my family well for many years.
Well, good. Well, we're glad you're with us. And Simon, you have also seen the Northern Lights, haven't you?
I have. It's an amazing experience. They're very beautiful. And hopefully... some of our listeners will learn more about them today.
Well, we're not only going to talk about them, and we have some beautiful photos of them in the magazine, but we're also going to talk about what it might be like to take pictures of them. It's difficult to really get a photo that shows some of the great things we see. Isn't that true?
It is. I was quite impressed by the photos in the magazine. I thought they were very well done, but it's very hard. There are a lot of conditions you have to account for when you want to take photos of the Northern Lights.
That's true. And, you know, this article could be a hobby of someone like taking pictures, but it could also be, I don't know, any other kind of an article.
Nature. Science.
Adventure, anything, mm-hmm. Right?
Adventure.
So we're going to start in by reading the title and the subtitle. Would you like to read that?
Sure. Photographing the Northern Lights. Braving the elements for a chance to witness a spectacular sight.
Now, that's something to talk about right there.
Well, that braving the elements part, that's interesting. When they're talking about elements here, they're talking about the weather. And so this makes me think about cold early mornings when I was growing up in Canada, when you had to be really brave to get out of bed because the temperature was so low.
That's
what we're talking about, mm-hmm. Braving the elements.
You know, sometimes if you go out in a typhoon, for instance, which you probably shouldn't do, but the wind is so strong and you say, I'm braving the wind or braving the elements.
Right. It means to go out and to have an experience. So elements, if you live in the northern hemisphere, like where Simon and I lived, you know, usually we think about the winter time, right? The cold, the really, really cold, the blizzards, the wind. But if you live toward the equator where it's, you know, you don't get such cold weather, then you're right. We think about typhoons or hurricanes. So whatever you're doing, you're out there being brave in the wind or the elements.
Bad weather.
It's, what if you live on the desert, then you brave the hot sun?
The hot sun,
yeah,
that's right.
I guess you could say that.
It kind of means to be putting up with something and be bold enough to go out and do something in it, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is going to be interesting to read, but be sure that you have the magazine because there's so many interesting pictures. But let's start by reading the first paragraphs.
So there we were, trying not to freeze at minus 40, which is about the same whether it's Fahrenheit or Celsius. We were up in Churchill, Manitoba, Canada, to photograph Northern Lights, since the next couple of years are supposed to be incredible. Our group was a varied lot, ranging from folks with point-and-shoot cameras to the guy with a $6,000 Nikon. And astoundingly, all of us got decent pictures. That's how far camera technology has come.
Well, I know if it's cold out, if it's minus anything, you kind of say, oh, it's freezing out there. But this was really cold.
Yeah, minus 40. And it's interesting here. It says it's about the same whether it's Fahrenheit or Celsius. And the reason I thought that was interesting is we have a collection of people here today who think in either Fahrenheit or Celsius.
We do.
Well, right. In America, we often use Fahrenheit. So if you say, oh, it's 32 degrees, well, that means zero, doesn't it, in Celsius?
I don't know.
Yeah, it does.
It does.
32 is zero. So I try to figure out anything from there, and I always just look at the charts and see.
What I'll tell you is 32 sounds pretty hot to me because I'm usually thinking in Celsius.
Mm-hmm. But if you're in Seattle and it's 32, then it's cold because that's zero.
But minus 40 is even colder.
Minus 40. I don't think I've ever been in a place that I can remember where it's minus 40. Have you?
Oh, yes, because when I was 10, I moved to western North Dakota, which is south of Saskatchewan, which is next to Manitoba. And in the wintertime there, in January, I hated January, it was often minus 20, minus 30, minus 40 for 2 or 3 weeks at a time.
Did you brave the elements to go to school then?
Yeah, I did.
But don't you have to cover your face and everything so your nose doesn't freeze?
Well, you know, if you're in high school, you might want to look cool, but so you don't really cover your face. But when you're walking outside, yes, you have to wear a hat, you have to have gloves, mittens, everything, or you will freeze to death.
You don't want any skin sticking out into the weather.
Okay. So this is Yvette, one of our writers that writes from time to time, and her husband takes pictures and she writes the articles. So there they were. They were out to see this. You can see pictures of people standing there looking up at the sky. And it is interesting, though, that when it gets down to minus 40, it's the same. I can't figure that out, but that's what it says, and I guess it's true.
Right. I think they converge below there.
Yeah.
One time I was back, and it was minus 60.
Minus 60?
It was minus 60. And then they're not accounting for the wind chill. It was minus 80 wind chill.
That's an interesting word you're using there, wind chill.
Right.
When
the wind blows, it makes it colder.
That's right. It makes it feel colder.
Mm-hmm. So if you live in this area like where we're talking about, that wind comes down off the Arctic,
Ice and everything.
Yeah. Right. So it blows way down there. There are no mountain ranges to stop it.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, where this article was taking place is in Churchill, Manitoba, Canada. Now, as soon as I hear the word Churchill, I think of the former leader in England years ago. Winston Churchill, I always think of that. But do you think this town was named after Churchill?
I don't think it was named after him, but he comes from a famous family of Churchills.
Okay.
So I'm pretty sure it's named after one of
some
the Churchills.
British name, anyway, right. So the name of the town is Churchill, and Manitoba is one of the provinces and
It's right in the middle of Canada. You can actually see it in the map we have here in the magazine. And it's an interesting province because we don't usually think of it as having too much water. We think of it as a prairie province. Mm-hmm. But it actually does have access to the ocean. It's just very far to the north. It's Arctic Ocean stuff on Hudson Bay. And that's where Churchill's located.
It's not really
located.
The ocean, but it's a bay. I mean, you're not on the ocean, right?
But it's salt water. So.
Okay. Yeah. But Hudson Bay, we hear about that because it's famous for Hudson Bay's had furs. They would kill animals and sell fur coats and stuff. Hudson Bay's well known for hunting of animals, isn't it?
That's right, mm-hmm. Especially for fur trading back in the 1800s.
Right. So you can see where it is. It's right in the middle, and that seems like a very cool place to me.
I think it is. Actually, I've been to Manitoba. Have you been to Manitoba, Simon?
But not to Churchill.
Me neither.
I've been to Winnipeg too far north for
in
me.
The south.
Well, I wouldn't mind seeing the polar bears, but we'll talk about, not the polar bears, but the black bears or whatever they are. We'll talk about them later. But this lady, Yvette, and her husband and a group of people, I think there's a photograph of them there, they went to Manitoba. Why did they go there?
Well, they went because they wanted to take pictures of the northern lights.
Okay.
So they went on a tour to do that.
Well, and they had heard that this year and the next couple of years that the Northern Lights were going to be especially beautiful. And she said that they were going to be incredible, which means hard to believe. So they said, well, let's go and film them. They're going to be extra special.
Right. Actually, they can tell when there are going to be northern lights. The scientists can tell. I think we're going to talk about that a little bit later. So people can prepare, you know, and be aware of when they're going to really be spectacular.
Right. We do that mostly thinking about the moon. There's certain times to say the moon will be closest to Earth. It'll be the brightest it has been for 10 years mm-hmm. or something. People get out there to take pictures of the moon, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they do the same thing with other things in nature, like the northern lights. So their group was a varied group. It means different kinds of people. What kinds of people went there?
Well, it looks like a whole range of people. You can see there are both men and women. And it's interesting to me that they don't have their faces covered in this photo, even though
maybe
they're standing
outside. Maybe they
just
took the scarves out for the photo,
minus
right.
40 degrees. Mm-hmm. So there are both men and women, but also it says that the people had from everything from point-and-shoot cameras. So that's the kind of camera I use.
You oh, don't most have to, do, right.
Well, yeah, it automatically adjusts. You don't have to.
Do anything,
a lot of people like to adjust their lenses, like my husband.
And change their lenses and do all that. But I like the point-and-shoot. You just pick it up and take a picture.
Right. So that's a point-and-shoot camera. And then we have the guy here with the $6,000 Nikon. So everything on that camera is going to be adjusted manually.
Well, if you went all the way up there to just do that, a $6,000 camera would be nice, mm-hmm. but I would probably have the point-and-shoot type myself.
It's easier to use, I guess.
That's right. I think so.
It's interesting here because as they're talking about the varied lot, I'm not sure they're really talking about so much different kinds of people as people who are different kinds of photographers. And I guess the idea being that some of these people are amateurs. They're not professional photographers. They're just sort of on a tour, and they want to take some pictures. But this guy with the $6,000 Nikon, maybe more a serious photographer.
Well, he probably sold his photos to some agencies or something. I mean, some of them were probably more like tourist types. And
right.
Some were professional photographers, and some just went along with their husband or something. You know, varied group, that's true. But the strange thing, and they could say astoundingly, because Yvette likes to use all kinds of very descriptive words here, and astoundingly means that she was very surprised to hear what?
They all got good pictures.
So no matter what they were, professional or not, they all got good pictures.
Right. Well, she says decent. I think this is interesting use of words. She said decent pictures. So some of them were okay and some of them were fabulous is what she means.
Well, naturally, you're not going to get the same kind of a photo on a point-and-cam camera as a 6000 Nikon. But all of the pictures look good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
better
than what you're using them for. Well, the reason is because of camera technology. It has come a long ways.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And she says camera technology, this shows how far camera technology has come. I remember when I was growing up, my mother having a point-and-shoot camera. And for some reason, our family pictures, you know, they weren't centered. They weren't they weren't very clear, but that isn't a problem anymore when you have a simple camera.
Well, and there used to be cameras you'd use. I think we had an Argus C3 or something. We used it for years. And it used to be people would buy a camera and use it for a long time. But now cameras are like cell phones. Every few months, here's the newest this one, and here's the newest that one. And it seems like just as soon as you buy one, there's a better one out.
That's right. I like to stick with, once I learn how to use something, I like to keep it a while.
Right.
But there are always vast improvements, and many over the years, as we can see.
Well, be sure and notice the beautiful pictures that are on that page, because they are actually wonderful. But let's take the next section, the middle section here, and on the next page, and read about this as we read the next section of our lesson.
And Churchill, better known as Polar Bear Central, 10,000 people stomp through this town of 850 on the southwest rim of Hudson Bay each fall during bear season. Another few thousand come for beluga whales in summer, and now there's a thriving winter season whose main feature is predictable, absolutely breathtaking northern lights. Our trip north came via Frontier's North Adventures, which has a very fancy tundra buggy, similar to a bus on giant wheels, with sofas, tables, snacks, heaters, and a bathroom. And though bears pour through here in October and November, by March, they're mostly gone, so it's safe to stand around with your tripod on a frozen river.
So So we see that besides the Northern Lights, this area of northern Manitoba on Hudson Bay, Churchill is famous for the polar bear. Well, it's called Polar Bear Central. It's very famous for their polar bears.
Right. I think we've even done articles on Churchill. And I know everybody's always talking about, when they talk about polar bears, they always mention Churchill. It's very famous, isn't it?
That's right. Polar bears actually migrate right through that area as they're heading out onto the ice when it's frozen in the winter.
And they come through it as they're going south for the summer.
As they're coming back onto the land,
yeah.
So.
Well, I know if I ever visited Churchill, I would certainly expect to see a polar bear. I'd be disappointed if I didn't.
Well, I wouldn't know if I would be disappointed.
Well, they're kind of cute, but, you know, they're a little big, aren't they?
Well, they are big, and they are fairly dangerous. Mm-hmm. In fact, I read just the other day, preparing for this article, that Churchill actually has a polar bear jail.
A jail for polar bears?
Yeah, apparently.
How do you round up a polar bear and put a polar bear in jail?
Well, the bears are supposed to be migrating through the town or passing through the town, but apparently some younger bears decide it's just easier to stay in town and maybe eat garbage or...
Yeah, they like to knock over the garbage cans and eat the garbage, right?
That's right. And so they have a place they put these troublesome polar bears until they can transport them far out of town.
To the ice, right?
Help them on their way, yeah.
Well, that'd be so fun. Maybe we should get some pictures of that sometime. That would be fun. But... A lot of people go through the town. I mean, it's kind of far away from the middle of Canada, which is the northern part of the United States, and the population is not very big up there. But 10,000 people go through the town. They stomp through it. They probably have snow boots on, I guess, or they just hike through there to go and see the wilderness.
That's right. It's not actually very easy to get to the town. There are no roads that get there. You have to take the train or fly in.
Is that right?
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, the train only goes a few times a week, too.
Oh.
So you have to time your visits very well. And so having 10,000 tourists is actually quite a lot for a little town like this, I would think.
Well, especially when there's a town of 850 people and there's 10,000 coming through, sort of overwhelming.
Yeah. Well, you know what their economy is built on.
Right, that's right.
And
restaurants feeding all those people.
And hotels, because you don't want to be sleeping in a sleeping bag outside.
No, because of the polar bears, right?
That's right. But Churchill has a lot more than just bears.
Okay, what else do they have?
Well, they have beluga whales, which are those cute white whales with the jiggly foreheads. I don't know if you've ever seen them.
We talked about these big bluefin whales, and we talked about all kinds of whales before, but these beluga are not that big, but they're kind of different.
They're very playful. I don't know if you've ever seen them in an aquarium.
Yes.
But they're kind of a fun-loving, playful whale. It's not very big. And I guess people love going to see them.
Well, they're also migrating through here, right, through this area in the summertime.
So you can see them, and if it's kind of summertime, in the thriving winter season. And why do they go there during the winter when it's so cold?
They go there to see the Northern Lights. Mm-hmm. So actually for this town, they have three kind of tourist seasons, the fall, and then the winter, and then the summer as well. But here, now they're coming, you know, we've already said it's minus 40 degrees because this is very far north. And the main feature, it says, is predictable. Okay, so that I thought that was pretty interesting because when I've seen the Northern Lights further south, when I lived in the northern part of the United States, it's not that predictable.
No, I've seen them in Seattle, too. But, you know, at certain times, I mean, you can see them in a very dark night and stuff and quite bright. And stuff, but not you never know. It's not predictable. It's that somebody will call somebody up, hey, you can see the Northern Lights. They get all excited about it. It's not predictable.
But here I think that it is because now they have scientists know when those solar spots come off and where they can appear, when they're going to appear. But I think it's because Churchill is so far north.
Yes.
You know, it's harder to see them the further south you go, obviously.
Well, and then they don't have a very big town, so they don't have too many lights in the city, so you can see the northern lights.
Yes.
That's right. They have a very big sky, too, up there because there's not as much forest and things like that, you know.
And tall buildings.
That's right. We live in places with a lot of mountains and tall buildings and things like that. So the sky seems a lot smaller for us. But up in Churchill, not a lot of tall buildings. And so you have this beautiful view of these northern lights.
Well, and they go on to say, but their trip north came, the way they went up there was by a kind of a tour agency, right?
Right, the Frontiers North Adventures. That kind of sounds kind of fun. So frontiers, of course, you know, when we talk about a frontier, we talk about something that hasn't been explored. It's on the edge of settlements, kind of. So these North Adventures, and it has a very fancy tundra buggy. I like that word.
Now,
tundra,
you know what buggy. Tundra is, don't you?
Yes. Have you seen tundra?
Tundra is kind of the landscape, the land that they have in places like
ground,
northern Canada.
It's frozen.
Frozen
earth.
Almost all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it only thaws.
They have that in Alaska, too.
Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of marshy, isn't it?
Yeah.
When
mm-hmm.
You have to be careful. When it does thaw, things tend to sink into it.
Right,
so it's kind
because
of marshy
when the sun's really bright or something like that. But it's frozen dirt.
That's right.
Really.
It's a very sensitive environment, I guess.
But it's kind of in the north, and it's interesting. They call their bus, their tour bus, they call it the tundra buggy.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty good.
Yeah. I do, too.
And it's got great big wheels. I'm sure they have snow tires on it and that kind of thing. But the inside of it is pretty interesting. In fact, there's a picture of the bus here. But what's it like inside? It's not like a regular bus.
If I didn't have to get off the bus at minus 40, I would go. It's sofas, tables, snacks, heaters, and a bathroom.
Is that the picture that we see over here on the next
that
page?
That is the
right,
picture.
That's the inside on the next
I'll
page.
You can see all the people sitting around there. It doesn't look like a bus.
I looked up this Frontiers North Adventures to check out their tundra buggies, and they are far more amazing than mentioned just here. Something
really?
For listeners to look into. Yeah, these tundra buggies, they're actually made by the tour company. So don't try to buy one. They have to make them themselves.
They're too expensive, I'm sure.
And they make them so that they can tow things. So you can stay overnight. They have things they'll tow behind them that have showers and bedrooms.
Oh, my goodness.
So you can go out. The other thing that's really interesting about them is they're very, very high off the ground,
mm-hmm.
almost high enough that a polar bear could walk underneath.
Mm.
Not quite that high. But the reason they do this is so that people are safe when they're taking pictures of the polar bears.
Hmm.
So the polar bears can come right up to it.
Makes it more interesting all the time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, so besides doing Northern Lights tours, they also do polar bear tours.
They probably do.
Yeah. I don't know if they drive the buggies out to see the beluga whales, but
it might be
maybe
fun. Right.
Maybe.
Well, anyway, the bears do go through there. There's so many of them that they pour through, just like water rushing through there. I mean, so many bears they go through there in October and November. But if you want to go in March, they're mostly gone. So if you don't want to see the bears, go after March. But I kind of like to see the bears. But it's safe, to go on the rivers. If you go after they're gone, you don't need to worry about meeting a polar bear. Sometimes people like to stand on the ice and take a picture. And when you want to have your camera still, you use a tripod, like a little rack to hold your camera on, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's find
husband.
Out more about training time. Let's finish the article.
Training time. But first, in Winnipeg, gateway to Churchill, we were given a clinic on technique and a chance to practice shooting the lights in the Manitoba Museum Planetarium, where it was warm and comfy. Pretend lights were projected across the domed ceiling so we could try different exposures and shutter speeds. Though the northern lights are there year-round, you need a dark sky and, stamina. Since the best lights seem to come in the wee hours of the coldest mornings. Temperatures below zero, sometimes well below, are common. So to photograph the aurora, you need to be prepared.
So now how do you get there and tell us more about this?
Well, first you go to Winnipeg. We mentioned earlier there aren't roads to Churchill.
Mm-hmm.
You take the train, and so they say here Winnipeg is the gateway to Churchill, meaning it's sort of the place you have to go through in order to get to Churchill.
Okay.
I thought it was kind of interesting how they prepared people to go up to take photos, because in Winnipeg they go to the Manitoba Museum Planetarium. So there they can actually make it look like they're Northern Lights so they can practice with their cameras.
It's an interesting word they use there, too. They say a clinic on technique.
Mm-hmm.
Usually when we say clinic, we're thinking about your health or going to visit the doctor.
How
but here they're talking about a class or a workshop, a seminar.
And they have pretend lights that looks like that, so they could project them over there so you could try to take pictures and learn how to do it and check your camera shutters and openings, your exposures and so forth. That was kind of interesting.
I thought that was but it's very, very efficient because mm-hmm. she goes on to tell why you don't want to do this up north, but we'll talk about that later as well. And she says that goes on to say that the northern lights are there year-round. You still need a dark sky and stamina. I love that word, stamina. Do you have stamina?
Yeah, it means strength or endurance. You have to be able to stay strong in a difficult situation because, it says, the best lights come out in the wee hours of the coldest mornings. The wee hours meaning very early in the morning, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the mm-hmm. morning. On the coldest mornings.
But I'd never heard of a place like that where you go and practice, so when you go out and take the pictures, it'll be better. That's pretty interesting. Have you ever been to a planetarium?
I've been to a planetarium, but not where they have done something like this.
No, but in a planetarium,
yeah, it's
place,
already dark.
Right, where you can see things in the sky that
yes.
can show you, you know, all the things. You could look at the constellations at night and the Big Dipper and all that, right?
Yes.
Those are interesting places.
You know, there actually, this is a little side note, but on your iPad, you can set, there is a one app you can put on, and if you hold it up to the sky, like when we were out on a boat in the ocean, we held it up to the sky, and you can see it clear. It shows you much clearer what's up there than what you can see with your own eye.
I'm surprised that Linda has so much technology. I didn't see, she was one of those tech things.
Yeah, my husband showed
me. Okay, your husband showed me.
I just used my cell phone
okay.
to take the pictures.
I wasn't taking a picture, but it was very interesting.
Well, that's good, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and though the northern lights are there all the time, you do need, like I said, the dark sky and, as we said, stamina. So if it's, you know, staying up there till 2 o'clock in the morning, the wee hours means 2 or 3 or the middle of the night, and it's very cold, you do need some stamina, don't you?
You do.
But our time is up, and you don't need a lot of stamina to listen in to advance because, you know, there's pictures and we talk about everything. So we'll be back tomorrow to talk about this some more. Thanks for coming today.
Bye.
Bye.